Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Welcome to Vox Novus, the new voice. Japanese Buddhist philosopher Daisaku Ikeda said, "If you want to understand the causes made in the past, look at the results as they are manifest in the present." We may be aware of events in our childhood that resulted in how our adult lives unfolded, but what about our ancestral heritage? Is it possible that events from generations ago play a part in our current lives, including emotional well-being and physical health? My guest this week on Vox Novus, Shelley Kerr, says your family's past may be the key to healing yourself in the present. Shelley Kerr is a past life regression practitioner in private practice for 20 years and the author of 8 books. Shelley received her PhD in parapsychic science from the American Institute of Holistic Theology and is a certified clinical hypnotherapist, master hypnotist, and master practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming. Her work has been featured on Coast to Coast AM with George Noory and William Shatner's Weird or What. Her website is pastlifelady.com, and she joins me this week to discuss her work and latest book, Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. Please join me in welcoming Shelley Kerr. Welcome, Shelley.
Victor, thank you so much for having me back on the show.
And thank you for joining us this week. Shelley, for our listeners meeting you for the first time, please share your early path and how it led to your interests in healing, metaphysics, and past lives.
Yes, this is a lifelong passion of mine that began with an eclectic family, Victor. I grew up in New Mexico part of the time, and then we lived in Colorado Springs. And my interest in past lives began when my mother attended a luncheon where the speaker was the woman who was the subject of the very famous past life regression book called The Search for Bridie Murphy. And so she bought the book, brought it home. And when I was a kid, I don't know what your listeners were doing at the family dinner table, but we were discussing reincarnation. And from the minute I heard about it, it just made sense to me. And then as an adult, a friend of mine was killed in a hiking accident. And many years after his death, when he first passed, I saw him in a window. I saw his spiritual image in a window. And then many years, almost 10 years later, he started to seem to come back. And I was living in Colorado again at the time, strangely enough. And somebody there said, well, maybe you should have a past life regression and see if there's some reason why this person keeps visiting you from beyond the grave. And so I had the regression. And after carrying years of unresolved grief and strange emotional baggage, this regression helped me more than anything else that I had ever done in my life. And I said, I have got to do this for other people. And that's what I've been doing.
Wonderful. Now, in the early 2000s, you had a life-changing near-death experience. What happened and how did it change your life?
Yes, that was another whole thing. Like I said, there's a reason why I like to write books, I guess. There's a lot that went on. But I went to Egypt, Turkey, and Greece kind of on a whim with no itinerary. And when I was there, there was just a lot of shifts going on. I came back from that trip and I started hearing the inner voice telling me there was something wrong with my heart. I was not going to live much longer. And one night I just felt myself lifting up out of my body. I went into the light where I was met with a bunch of light beings. And I saw my grandmother there who had passed away before I was born. And it was all very cerebral and nonverbal, but they told me it was time to go back. And when I came back from that, I had healing energies in my hands. And I had a knowingness of how to do these things, how to run energy, how to heal the body, that was completely out of my current life awareness. And so then I kind of went on a quest to try to figure out on a more conscious level, you know, what was happening. I took Reiki classes, I took my hypnotherapy classes and neuro-linguistic programming and all kinds of training, trying to figure this out, and then ended up deciding to get a PhD and began working with clients. So
you had mentioned that your trip to Turkey, Greece, and Egypt had no itinerary, but did you have a calling there? Did you have a sense about being there before?
Oh, yes. But I think that at that point, it wasn't as much in my conscious awareness as it is now. A few years ago, I wrote a book series about a phenomenon that I call supretrovi, which is when the soul is having a spontaneous past life recollection that's brought on not by the hypnotherapy, but by traveling to these places. And I think that's exactly what happened when I was in Egypt. I was having just deep love affair with Luxor, and I had a lot of problems in Cairo, and it was just like, you know, emotional and physical bombardment of all these different sensations was happening to me back then. I didn't really have a construct through which to describe it, but I've since interviewed tons of people, and I think this happens to people all the time, that we're drawn as souls into the places where we've lived before, because we're trying to find ourselves, you know, we're trying to rediscover ourselves. And I feel that, yeah, it's a spiritual calling. And that's kind of what happened at the drop of a hat. Normal people, Victor, believe it or not, they don't go to Egypt in June. Okay, that's nuts. You want to get a good deal? Yes, you're going to get a great deal on travel, because no one in their right mind does it. So I recommend it, but I don't recommend it. But it was very life-changing, to say the least.
Absolutely. Last time you were on, we discussed your book, Past Lives with Pets. What was the feedback like from readers? And do you have any stories to share?
Yeah, a lot of the feedback actually was really surprising. I heard from a lot of people who had lost pets, which was kind of surprising. There's exercises in that book to help us identify our past life connections with our pets. But there's also, you know, a huge aspect of that has to do with grief recovery, because I think that's just so profound. Our pets are a part of our families. And so I heard from a lot of people really struggling with grief and got a lot of pictures of little fur balls. And it just kind of warms my heart. There's so many people in this earth right now who love their pets so deeply, like I do. And like you do, I know you and your family do as well. And so that was really, really cool to connect with them at that level.
Do people grieve the loss of pets more than family members and friends sometimes?
You're laughing, so you must already know the answer, Victor. And I'm afraid it's a resounding yes.
Absolutely. It's funny how the connection that we have with our animal companions is so strong. So strong. I remember when we lost our Kismet a few years ago. It took us a long time to get over that loss. And the funny thing is that she definitely had past lives with us, because she immediately recognized us when we went to the animal shelter for the adoption. And it was like she'd been with us forever. And we still miss her, even though she's gone now a few years. So absolutely. For those who are not familiar with past life regression, what is a session like?
It begins with my receiving a letter, an email, maybe a phone call, where we discuss like what are the issues that the client is looking to work on. And then during the session, I guide people through relaxation. We cross the first threshold where people are met by either an angel or a healing spirit guide who can accompany them on the journey. And then we go into a space where we're attempting to access the source event, the true source of the actual issue that the person is there to work on, assuming in this construct, obviously, that that issue didn't just begin yesterday or last week, that potentially it began before our current lifetime. So, you know, I'm guiding them back to the furthest place that I can go so that we can start to address that issue at the source, and then bring the light and healing and understanding and lessons into the conscious awareness so that they can feel better when they leave the session.
But you say that it didn't happen yesterday, but in theory, if someone has a repetitive pattern in their lives, chances are it's been with them for a while.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yes, in that sense. I do think that unfortunately or unfortunately, a lot of the things that we're doing and experiencing in this current life are things that we have definitely been doing before. And so if they're helpful and wonderful and we want to continue to do those, that's wonderful. But if they're things that we would like to change, then sometimes just having that different perspective of looking at it from the past life angle and saying, oh, wow, you know what? I was doing the same thing back then. Maybe I can change. Maybe I can stop doing this or do things differently in a way that would be more empowering and helpful in the current experience.
Do we ever graduate from reincarnation school?
Somebody asked me that recently, like, I hear of clients sometimes going, well, you know, this is going to be my last life. I'm not coming back here. I don't really always identify with that kind of thinking. I mean, I feel like as souls, we come here to help each other. I don't really know that we ever really graduate from that. I feel like our souls are choosing different experiences to learn and grow. But I also feel like beyond that, even if we got to some pinnacle of enlightenment, let's just say whatever, we're still needing to be here to help other people. I mean, look at the Dalai Lama, for example. I mean, there's a guy who we can all agree that's enlightened over there. Okay, this is a model of how we should all try to be in the world. So to me, just being sometimes can be a gift to other people. So I don't know if we're going to graduate from this. Because, I mean, what are we going to do? Float around in a cloud and just, you know, I feel like that would be very boring myself. So what do you think?
So what you're saying is many of us are mini bodhisattvas. Is that what you're saying?
Hopefully, yes. We're getting there. I don't think I'm there, though.
And for listeners who are not aware, a bodhisattva is an enlightened being who has the opportunity to end the cycle of reincarnation and go on to nirvana, but so loves humanity that they stay around to help us. And that's what the bodhisattva is. And Kuan Yin is a famous example of a bodhisattva. So how does genealogical regression differ from past life regression?
Well, what ended up happening, because I've been doing this for many years, is, again, I'm trying to find this source event where we can get to the root cause of whatever's troubling somebody in the current life experience. And so obviously I'm going to begin by attempting to take them into past lives. Even if they go into a past life experience and we're talking about these things intuitively or otherwise, if I start to get the vibe that, wait a minute, I just don't feel like we're there yet, then sometimes we will end up having visionary encounters with the person's parents, the higher selves or souls of their parents. And we go into a space where we ask mom and dad, okay, is there someone here who needs healing today on their ancestral line? And if mom or dad says yes, then we can travel instead of into our own past lives. We travel over events that happened to an ancestor in the distant past that normally has a very intense emotional charge to it, or it could be some tragedy or something. And then we can send light and healing to that event and experience the sensation of having that healing move from that past event through all ancestors into the parent and into the individual and even on out into the future.
Mm. That's wonderful. Is there, just out of curiosity, have you seen or do you know of a DNA connection here?
A DNA connection between the past life person and the ancestral person?
In essence, carrying that ancestral event, whatever it might be, genetically.
Well, yes. There are so many studies now being done on this, Victor. It's pretty shocking that there's scientific studies that are proving that 50% of our personality is brought directly through our DNA. And further to that, they've done studies on the ancestors, for example, of the Holocaust survivors, and they've proven that they are ancestrally carrying trauma in their DNA. So we are very connected through the DNA with these ancestors. And then I also I had this happen a couple times recently and occasionally over the years, that somebody goes into a past life experience and simultaneously realizes that in this past life, they were also their own ancestor. So I think that the energy is kind of hitting people at all kinds of different levels, but scientifically proven studies are saying, yes, we are connected. And so it's just something that I feel people should just be aware of, that we need to send the light of love and compassion to each other, to our planet, and to all beings. But while we're at it, how about throwing in the ancestors as well? I think it's very important.
If we give ourselves that compassion, self-compassion, because a lot of people don't do that these days, if we give ourselves self-compassion, is that being sent back?
I think it is, yes. And likewise, if we aren't able, as you've suggested, which is so true, I mean, it's, I think self-love and self-acceptance is probably one of the collectively biggest lessons that everybody is trying to learn, just to accept ourselves. So if we can't accept ourselves, one way we can indirectly accept ourselves is to love and have grace and compassion for the ancestors. Because again, at the end of the day, that would then affect us also, because we are the ancestors.
Absolutely. I understand that completely. And I don't know if I shared this with you the last time, but self-love has always been an issue for me. Not always. It's over now. I found that in myself, and self-worth. But I remember a line from the Moody Blues from 1970, the song Question of Balance and Question. And Justin Hayward wrote, "When you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant for you."
Oh, I'm getting the chills. Oh, I remember that.
You remember
that. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And it's so true. It's so true. Absolutely. And yes, I agree. It's just a lifelong struggle. You know, people will say, so-and-so really is comfortable in their own skin, or you're not comfortable in your own skin. And I think it takes a while, as all of us are working through our stuff, and maybe we made mistakes in the past and we're beating ourselves up. And finally, you just open your hands and accept yourself. It's a good thing to do.
Absolutely. Is there a way to differentiate current life triggers from ancestral ones?
That's a great question. I think that's very, very difficult to discern, because I think we're having a lot of triggers. Whether they're coming from past life influences, ancestral influences that we may not even be aware of. I think people would probably be more likely to become aware of these things now that the society has gotten so obsessed with studying the DNA, studying the ancestral history through the websites like Ancestry.com and things like that. It would probably be easier, but I do think this is very difficult to discern. And I think that meditation, guided journeys, such as some of the things that are in this book, could probably help with that. But I think that's another tough one there, Victor.
Is there a soul family aspect to genealogical regression?
I believe there is. I've always sensed that we have free will. And yet also within that, I believe that before we arrived, we made certain plans about what we wanted to do here, the people we were going to meet. We choose our families. I truly believe that we choose many of our friends, you know, for the enriching aspects of the things that they're here to teach us and these soul contracts. And so I think that's a very deep part of that, because it's a huge commitment, energetically, spiritually, if you will, even the people who we feel like we've had past lives with. But if you think about the connection that you have with these ancestors, you've agreed to partake in that. And it's a huge soul contract. Absolutely.
One of the things that's come up for me, especially in the last two and a half years, is the folks that I have on these shows, by the time the show is over, or very soon into the show, I recognize that I know them on a soul level and that we've traveled together before. Is that happening more and more, especially for people in the helping and caring fields?
Oh, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think all of us, you know, you and I met through some mutual friends, and I think all of us in this helping profession, we've got to be some kind of a soul group on some level. You know, even like if you look at people's Facebook friends, okay, you think, okay, well, that's very random, but you're still kind of interconnected through this web of connectivity, this 6 degrees kind of stuff, if you will. There's got to be some deeper connection, especially when we all are of like mind. We're like a collective, a small aspect of collective consciousness moving together to kind of create certain vibrational energies around the planet. I think we come here together in a group to do that. And we recognize each other.
And I count you as part of that very special soul family that we belong to.
Yes, I count you as that as well. Yes.
Absolutely. My guest, Shelley Kerr, she's the author of Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. Shelley, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
My website is pastlifelady.com, and there's a book link there that they can click on and check out my books.
Wonderful. And we'll be back with more of Shelley after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
The best of the holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Satvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Shelley Kerr. She's the author of Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. Shelley, in several books of the Old Testament, there's a reference to the sins of the fathers being passed down to third and fourth generations. Is there a karma aspect in this work?
I think so, definitely, yes. I don't know that I would have even believed this in the earlier part of my career, but I have come to understand that, yes, we must be energetically carrying certain thought forms and certain energies through from the ancestors. And so some of those can be wonderful, and then some of them, you know, need a healing. And so I think that there's definitely something to that. And again, you see this referenced, you know, in the Bible and other spiritual works. So the ancient people had an understanding of this kind of thing, and so I think there's something to it.
Have you encountered anyone who in a past life has had a terrible ancestor?
Not I guess I'm thinking of the ones lately, and even in this book, I guess they weren't horrible. I mean, I think sometimes in these past life regressions and ancestral regressions, there are ancestors and different figures who maybe are put in impossible positions where they maybe are involved in armies that have to kill, or they're having to steal something like bread in order to survive. I think people are put in life and death situations much of the time. And so we could judge those things, but I guess we could also say, well, if we were living in these harsh circumstances, perhaps we would have to do the same things. And so, and then a lot of my research over the years, through a strange fluke, I sent out an email several years ago. I was asking my clients, so are you blessed, cursed, or just lucky? And I was kind of making a joke about the fact that I feel like I'm the luckiest person alive, and I'm blessed, and I'm lucky, and it's wonderful. And I ended up getting a lot of letters from people who told me they thought they were cursed. And so I ended up working with a lot of these individuals, trying to help them reshape the way they're viewing reality. And so in some senses, in this work as well, in the ancestral work, there's case histories in this book where we talk about people who believe that their ancestor was cursed. And they can have visionary encounters sometimes where the ancestor maybe offended someone or did something. Normally, the things that I've found is it wasn't anything, you know, horrible, but because they offended somebody, maybe somebody gave them the evil eye or said that they were going to have bad luck and things like that. So those things can be cleared and resolved. But I haven't seen anything really, really horrible, fortunately.
So you haven't seen, for example, an ancestor of, let's say, Genghis Khan or Attila the Hun or Adolf Hitler?
I have not encountered anything like that.
No one that bad. Okay, all righty. Now, you touched upon curse, so let's talk about that now. So family curses actually are real, are they?
There's two ways to look at it. One is, okay, somebody could have put the evil eye on somebody back in the 1300s or something. That's certainly possible. What also tends to happen, unfortunately, is, you know, maybe the mother or father just tells the kids, well, our family's cursed. You know, because I think we're either focusing on the good things that happen to us or the bad things. And everyone in this planet has good and bad happening to them. So you're either focusing on one or the other. And I think that what ends up happening sometimes, unfortunately, is that if we're too busy focusing on the negative things, then we don't see the miracles that are all around us. And so then this can start to kind of spiral out of control where this is all we're focusing on. And so a lot of the work has to do with just refocusing energy and trying to think about the blessings that we have all around us.
Yeah, the old expression, energy flows where intention goes. So if you put your attention on the negative, that's what you're going to see.
Exactly.
Absolutely. How do you clear a family curse?
Well, you can take them. There's exercises in this book for those who may be interested in this. But you can, well, when I'm working with a client, my first thing would be to take them back into the past. If it's an ancestor where the ancestor, let's say, offended someone, there's a case history in the book where I'm talking about that. So he went back there. He tries to apologize to the offended person. But if the offended person won't accept the apology, hopefully if they do, okay, fine. They apologize. We just say, God bless you, you know, cut the cords and move on. But if that doesn't happen, then in one of the case histories, I had the individual imagine that they could just go back to the series of events before this whole string of events occurred and just imagine that they could kind of change that one little thing just a little bit to let go of the negative thought form and the emotion that was carrying forth through the ancestral line. And so then that starts to relieve some things.
And in addition to the curses, you talk about vows, family vows. Give us an example of that.
A great example would be, I will never love again. Or a super common one in past lives as well would be anyone who believes that they have lived a more monastic lifestyle as a monk or as a nun. You know, they'll go and take the vow of poverty. And then in the current lifetime, maybe they're having a problem, you know, attracting any kind of abundance. And so you can go back into the past life and clear that, and then that can help. But if that is not the real source event, sometimes it's an ancestor who may have taken the vow of poverty. And then that kind of energetically has carried forward through the DNA. And so you could just go send some light to that and just say, you know, I'm just going to release all that is no longer serving me so that I can create abundance and prosperity in my life.
That's interesting that someone in the past took a vow of poverty and it manifests in financial trouble in this lifetime. That's, have you had a couple of people like that?
Oh, yes. I mean, this is very, very common, actually. This happens more often than people would realize.
Wow, that's really amazing. What are some examples of physical illness being passed down? And is there also, we talked about the genetic component in terms of trauma. What about the physical and the metaphysical?
Yeah, one of my favorite cases, histories in this book was about a woman who was having migraines. She'd been working for many years as an emergency room nurse. And then it just kind of came about that she discussed the fact that her mother was a nurse, her grandmother was a nurse, everybody was a nurse. And so during the session, we were, of course, trying to address this migraine. We ended up traveling down her maternal family line, and she zapped back into an event in the Civil War where she saw one of her great-great-great-grandmothers selflessly caring for people on the battlefield. And it really made her very, very emotional, because the other piece of the puzzle that I didn't maybe initially realize we were working on, you know how, like, even if you're doing what God put you here to do, you still might have times where you're kind of going, well, I don't know, was there something else I was supposed to be when I grew up? And so she was kind of at that place in her life as well. But she got very emotional seeing her ancestor just out on the battlefield, traumatized by these cannon blasts, but yet just tuning all that out and just focusing on helping. And she just was like, oh my gosh, you know, I will never, ever question that again. This is what I'm supposed to do. How can I be complaining or even questioning when I see someone, you know, behaving like this? And so there was an energy of just bringing the light around the trauma that was surrounding the grandmother, bringing that forward to help loosen up the energy around the migraines. But at the end of the day, even more beneficial was the confirmation that she received on such a deep level that she really was doing this for a reason. This really was what God put her here to do. And I think that's one of the things that people struggle with in their lives, is just like, what the heck am I supposed to be doing here? And so I think that turned out to be an even bigger gift than the physical healing.
So that was both emotional and physical. What about specifically emotional illness?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of our most challenging emotions that any of us face is fear. If we were being chased by saber-toothed tigers or something, obviously that would be a problem. But a lot of the fears that we have in modern society are things that are more emotional in nature and are really holding us back from really living our full potential. So one of my clients really was telling me, I meet a lot of people over the years, and this was one of the many who really feels like they have a calling, they have a talent as an intuitive, they feel like they should be helping others in this way or doing readings or something. But she said, there's just something there. It's just blocking me. It's holding me back. So of course, when I hear this, I'm going to go into the obvious first thought, which is, okay, there's something in her past life. Maybe she was burned at the stake or who knows what. And we're just going to go back into the past. We're going to clear it up and it's going to be no problem. So this was another example. We try doing that. She went back into the past and had this very vivid image of herself, you know, in this tribal setting where she was very respected and revered. It was a very lovely experience. There was no trauma around it or anything. So we're still back to square one now going, wait a minute, there's something blocking her. So what could it possibly be? So she went down the ancestral line to an ancestor that was a seer who was advising a king and was very trusted and beloved by the king, but ended up having a vision that was so accurate that the king's trusted advisors were going to try to assassinate him. And she described the whole thing. She warned him. He didn't believe her. And then when the scene happened almost identically to what the ancestor had predicted, they assumed that she was in on the plot. And so she went to her death. And so this fear of you know, not wanting to say anything or not wanting to be persecuted, ended up in this case where it often could be in the past lives of the person themselves. It was the ancestral fear that had been brought forward through time. So we did a big healing on that. And then the next time I saw her, yeah, she was finally out doing her readings and obviously being very successful at them because she had this ancestral gift for doing that.
Mm, that's wonderful. What about those in this lifetime who are shy or withdrawn?
Yes. There was a case study in the book as well about someone who was very, very shy and wanted to have a relationship, but was so shy that it was almost painful. And so we, again, went into past situations, didn't really see anything. And during the session, he starts talking about this idea that he's heard this voice in his dreams and in his mind just berating him and telling him, you know, you can't do this. You're never going to amount to anything. And so a lot of times when somebody says that a voice in their head is telling and berating them and, you know, downplaying them, I think to myself, well, maybe this is, you know, coming from childhood, maybe this is a parent who was scolding them. And then that kind of tends to play like a little tape recorder in people's minds. And so we can go back and heal that. So we then went to have this visionary encounter with his parents. And I was thinking, my gosh, you know, these people seem like lovely people. And he said, no, it's not them at all. And so it come to find out it was one of the ancestors who was being berated in a past situation that happened to the ancestor. So we did the healing at that level. And then it kind of loosened up this inner voice that was being carried through. And then the guy was able to go, like last time I saw him, had a girlfriend. I don't know whatever happened with that. I didn't see him since. But at least he was able to move forward in some meaningful way.
What are some of the healing tools that you bring into these sessions?
It's kind of, using the guided journeys, we're guiding them into the past, but at the same time, I'm sending energy. I'm having them imagine like a healing light is going to pour down over troubling events. We're going to raise the frequency of those events. And so I'll sit there and send energy to the event as well while I'm having the client imagine like light pouring down over heavy energy until that light gets, like, I'll use my voice and I'll say it's getting lighter and lighter and lighter. And the scene is very dark, let's say, but it's getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And so we just sit there and kind of hold the energy on these heavier spaces until the energy just starts to shift, even just a little bit, just to bring a little more space into it. And then I'll wait until the client can tell me, so is it, let me know when this is feeling better. And they'll go, oh yeah, it's starting to feel better. Okay, great. Because every bit of this is just about just bringing even just a little bit more light, a little bit more space into some of these heavier energies can make a huge impact on people.
If someone wanted to have one of these sessions with you, what's the process?
They can go over to pastlifelady.com, and I've got a private sessions link, and there is a scheduler there that they can do.
And what are the types of things that people have to prepare prior to having that session with you, do you recommend?
You know, I think people want to prepare. I don't know that they really need to prepare, other than to just tell me exactly like what is bringing them to the session, whether it's troubling things or whether they'd like to learn more about their soul purpose or why am I here. I like to just receive a letter from people. But in terms of preparing, I mean, I think some people are very nervous. I mean, meditating can help, but it's not necessary. I'm going to use a lot of my intuition. So sometimes I just like to be very kind of fresh in that. And I don't want to tune too far into it before we begin the session, because sometimes really surprising things can be revealed. So,
and on average, how many sessions does it take to do this clearing?
I would say, I mean, my goal is to just make it one session, but there are some people who have a lot of different kinds of things going on. So I would say 3 would be the max.
My guest, Shelley Kerr, she's the author of Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. We'll be back with more of Shelley after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions. But they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Back on Vox Novus, my guest this week is Shelley Kerr. She's the author of Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. Shelley, my mother transitioned a year ago and my mother-in-law in 2018. How may those of us who have lost our moms connect with them for healing?
First of all, I'm so sorry for your loss. That is incredibly difficult. And, you know, I hope that the exercises in this book can definitely bring comfort to those who have lost a parent, because a lot of these journeys are where we're going to have a visionary encounter with the higher self or the soul of your parents. And in that, there's some exercises where we can connect with those who we've loved and lost and just bring, you know, great healing and acceptance in those areas that are very, very difficult. And I hope it brings comfort to people.
May we also achieve this healing with mothers who are still alive?
Yes. And one of the reasons is because I like to establish the fact that when we go on these spiritual journeys, we are not meeting with the mother who is physically in the physical world. And the reason is because, you know, sometimes we have a wonderful relationship with our parents and sometimes we don't. So at the soul level, I think that's the place where people can better appreciate the fact that you did come together for a reason. Maybe it wasn't always a bed of roses, but at a soul level, you know, the souls who sometimes push our buttons the most are the ones who love us the most. And so at that level, there's just deep understanding. There can be forgiveness and healing that can be experienced at a very deep level that can hopefully bring great peace to people in their current life.
Do these same exercises apply for our fathers?
Oh, yes. The book is divided into maternal exercises for mother stuff, and then paternal for our fathers. So we're going to connect with them at the same level as well, at the soul level.
And how do those differ, just out of curiosity?
The exercises themselves are very similar, except that when we're going on the journey, our intention is that our mother is going to step through and we're going to have conversations. There's conversations where we're going to talk with our mother and talk with our father. We're going to do some healing of the inner child. Like if there was things that happened in our childhood, maybe we misunderstood them. We can meet with the higher selves of our mother or our father, depending on which exercise we're doing, and have these conversations with their higher selves in the theater of the mind. And people could say, well, okay, is this real? It feels like I'm making all of this up. But it really creates real change that can be very immediately felt, especially if people's parents are still around. Sometimes it can, you know, change their behavior, or they might reach out and want to have a conversation. Maybe if they, you know, if you're somebody who hasn't talked to a parent in a while. So it can be very, very interesting and transformational.
Now, that's for blood mothers and fathers. What about step-parents?
I do have a lot of exercises in the book as well for those who have different kind of family situations, whether it is you've been adopted, whether I don't specifically call it a step-parent, but to me, the step-parent is kind of the same as the adoptive parent, the parent who has stepped into that role through different circumstance. So there are exercises for that as well, because whether you're related to someone by blood or not, you know, if someone adopts you or if a step parent comes into your life, that is a very powerful and significant relationship that also, you know, needs our love and attention as well.
You know, unfortunately, through the pandemic, always, but especially during the pandemic, a lot of folks have lost children. How do you work with them?
Oh my gosh. I have not personally worked with as many of those kinds of cases. But if I was to work with them, wow. I mean, that has to be, well, I guess I do. I have an aunt. Well, I guess I've got a couple of aunts who have lost their kids. One of my aunts lost two of her three kids. Oh. And, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't even know how to begin, you know, to understand how to even comfort people who have been through things like that. Because we talked about our pets in the earlier segment, I mean, how we love our pets. But, you know, the way a mother or father loves their child, to lose them has to be one of the most difficult things that any soul could ever go through. So I think there, you know, I do a lot of guided imagery to help people through grief recovery of different scenarios that have happened to them. I think there's a certain point where too soon after the event would be too soon. But at a certain point, if people are more to a place where they're ready to have a visionary encounter in their mind and go speak to their child's higher self, I don't know. I think that would take a while, though. And I think that with all the things that have been going on this year, this has just been a really tough year for so many people. And there have been, unfortunately, so many young people taking their lives and just different things happening, accidents and things. There's been overdoses. I mean, everybody's heard about this. It's just absolutely tragic. I think this is probably, for this kind of work, might be a bit too soon and too raw. But at some point in the future, perhaps these kinds of exercises could be very helpful for those situations.
Yes, I agree with you. Having, in my capacity as an interfaith minister and doing bereavement work, I know that the loss of a child is the most difficult loss of all, and there are no words that you could ever say to a parent who has lost a child. The greatest gift you could give them is sacred presence and listening, and that's really what they want in the best that, you can, that any of us can offer to them. So how may we use your techniques to prevent the transfer and heal future generations?
There's some exercises in the book that are super, they're actually really simple. It's just a matter of directing our consciousness. We can send love and light very easily back to, just say, I'm going to send this to all my mother's ancestors on both sides of the family, all father's ancestors, to my current relatives, to future generations. We can use our power of imagination and our spirituality to project our energy out into the future, just sending love and light to all of these relatives, ancestors, and relations, past, present, and future. And so the book takes people into journeys where they can do this very, very easily.
What about those of us who have families that are not particularly spiritual? May we share this healing with them?
If we can't, you know, a lot of people aren't going to necessarily tell people out of their physical mouth that they're going to do this kind of work because their family might say, okay, cuckoo, cuckoo. You know, we don't necessarily have to discuss it out of the mouth for the healing and the benefit to be received. When we go, one of my favorite exercises in the book is where we're going to do one that's based on this cord cutting process, where we bring all of our ancestors out onto a stage, we send everybody a blessing, and then we just cut cords between them, just sending them love and peace and healing. It's kind of like saying whatever went on in the past, the good, the bad, we just bless it, we release it, and we put it up to God, and we just send light to everybody. And when we do these healings at that level, we're really inviting the higher selves / souls of our parents, our siblings, our cousins, our aunts, uncles, grandparents, and then every other person that we've ever known is out there. So when we cut cords with people, it's really weird, but it brings forth this magnetic attraction by which, even though it feels like we're making it up, even though we did this in our mind, we didn't tell anyone about it, suddenly now this cousin you haven't heard from in a decade starts calling you, or somebody sends you a friend request on Facebook and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. You haven't thought of these people in years, and now they're going to come out of the woodwork and they're going to want to energetically reconnect with you, because even though you didn't say anything about it, they still get the healing. It's like the same of you, Victor, as a minister. You're sending prayer to people. It's the same thing. You're wishing them well. You're praying for them in that way. And we do know that the power of prayer and the love and intentions that we send to each other really work.
Absolutely. That's actually been demonstrated in medical testing, where people who were prayed for in hospitals had better healing results than those who were not prayed for.
Absolutely.
And they were unaware. So there's no placebo effect here.
No.
And that's been documented time and time again. And you talked about connecting with the non-believer or the non-spiritual person on the sense of the higher self or on the soul level. And they resonate with this on that level, even if they don't resonate with it in their conscious level.
Yeah, I've had to do a lot of writing and teaching about this concept, because I do teach a lot of energy healing. And I feel like if I want to send an energy healing to someone, I've had instances where I said to the person out of my mouth, would you like a healing? And they said, yes, I would. Then I start to send energy and no energy is being sent. Likewise, I've heard people say, no, I do not want a healing. And then when you talk to the higher self, they would like to receive a healing. So I think healing has to be sent, whether it's through these guided journeys or any kind of healing or prayer, you know, with the spirit that you're free to accept or reject this. We're putting this in God's hands and the higher power's hands. And we just trust that whatever is for the highest good of all concerned is going to be done. We understand that we, healer, are not in charge. We are just sending this love, and we're just going to allow it to go where it will without a lot of attachment to that. And then when you come to it with that attitude, you realize that that's the best way. That's really the only, in my mind, proper way to be sending this healing, because I don't feel like when we're in a physical body, we're so bombarded with living and influences coming at us from all directions that we don't often know ourselves fully. I mean, I think that's kind of what we were alluding to earlier. We're trying to learn how to love and accept ourselves and even know ourselves and what we truly want. And I feel like the only way we can get to the heart of what that actually is to address people as souls and remember that even if they're doing what we would consider to be hideous, unacceptable nonsense, that at a soul level, there's still someone who is profound and who's worth loving and who's worth forgiving. Maybe that's more difficult, okay, but all of these things are helping everyone, including ourselves, in the end.
Absolutely. What would you like readers to take away from Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life?
I hope that, you know, through all of this that we've been through this past year, it has been so difficult in so many different ways for people. And I feel like it's so important to do these prayers for each other, for our country, for the world. And I just want people to take away also, though, that when we're doing that, which is so important, that I'd like us to just take a minute and just consider, what if I could just send some love to my ancestors? And that would, in essence, like we've discussed before, it would be sending love to ourselves in a way that maybe we couldn't directly love ourselves. But if we could love our ancestors, everyone who we come in contact with, who our family comes in contact with in the future, would be positively impacted by this newly more light-filled aspect of ourselves, that we would be showing up to the world in the best possible version of ourselves, let's just say.
The work and wisdom of Shelley Kerr, her book, Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life. Shelley, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you and your work.
Thank you, Victor. It's been such a joy to be with you again. My website is pastlifelady.com. And if you go over there, there's a book link. People can click on it. I've got the Heal Your Ancestors to Heal Your Life on my homepage as well. I've got a YouTube channel. If you just go search Past Life Lady on YouTube, I've got a ton of free videos with different processes that people can try. And then I just posted this course in my online school, which is at healingarts.thinkific.com, and they can find those links on pastlifelady.com as well. If people want to take the journeys with me, they can do that as well.
Shelley, a joy to have you with us.
Victor, you are a joy, and I just send you so many blessings on your path. Thank you for everything you're doing. It's wonderful.
And you. And thank you for joining us on Vox Novus. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.